Hello, I'm Paul Wilkinson from MasteringPortraitPhotography.com. In this podcast, we are going to talk a little bit about the importance of your workflow, and I'll answer the question, why do I say be kind to yourselves? Hi all, had one of the nicest emails today. Somebody said, I have a voice for radio. And I have to say, that's a lovely thing to hear, but it's very close to saying I have a face for radio. And I suspect she was just being polite. Yes, I probably do have a face for radio. I doubt I have a voice for radio, but at least some people are finding these podcasts entertaining and if not useful. So thank you to Karen for emailing that across to me. It made me smile. One of the nicest things I've heard in a long time. And of course, when I'm sitting up here in our makeshift studio, and I reckon you can probably still hear the birds singing in the background, it does feel a bit weird because it's not like I can see anyone. It's not like when we're on stage and I'm presenting to a room full of people, I can see their reactions. Here, I have no idea. I've no idea if anyone's listening. And if they are listening, I have no idea whether it's useful or entertaining or both or... I don't know. We don't get any statistics on it at all, except for the occasional email. On that happy note, if you are a subscriber on iTunes to the podcast, any chance you can hop across and give us a review and, you know, a nice rating. I wouldn't be embarrassed at all if you gave us a 5-star review. That wouldn't faze me in the slightest. Feel free to go across on the Apple's finest and chuck us some stars. It makes my life much, much nicer. Anyway, today I'm going to talk a bit about workflow and why it's important you get it sorted and sorted early. This has come up quite a few times recently, and so it occurred to me that probably I should talk about its importance, if not the details of it. But prior to that, why at the end of each podcast do I say be kind to yourselves? Well, let me describe my boss. My boss is a bit of a git, if I'm honest. He's tough. He's ambitious, he's competitive, he is never really satisfied. No matter what I do, I always get the feedback that it's not quite good enough. I could do better tomorrow, I could take a better picture, I could be better at emails or being organized, or my desk could be tidier. The images that he sees, he wishes I could take, and yet somehow I never quite seem to attain the greatness he has in his head. He wishes he earned more money, and he's pushing me constantly to drive the business forward. He's a really tough boss. He's hard, you know? I mean, I think he's quite likable, but he's just tough. Who's that boss? Well, of course, that boss is me. I work for myself. And I have never felt so driven and so in need of doing a good job as I am now that I work for myself. And that's why I say be kind to yourselves, because as a photographer, most of you, if not all of you, work for yourself. Now, you'll learn pretty quickly, if you haven't already, that running a business is quite specific, and it's you are beholden in the end to your clients and to the revenue and to financial pressures and everything else. And you're going to generate your livelihood by creating images. If you're a professional, that's your job. Even if you're an amateur, you'll still be driven. You'll still want to create better images tomorrow. You'll still want to be the best that you can be. And you'll always feel that today is good, but tomorrow should be an improvement. And if you're not thinking like that, you won't improve. But the downside is you're never satisfied either. And you'll beat yourself up. You'll beat yourself up that you didn't get the lighting quite right, or you missed something in the background, or you missed a bit of composition, or you missed a bit of posing. Doesn't really matter. Something somewhere in each and every image that you create will leave you feeling that you could do it better. Oh, if only. You know that feeling, that if only feeling when you look at an image that other people seem to love, and yet you're looking at it thinking, oh, someone else is better than me. They're all better than me. Why is everybody else having a better time than me? Why are they creating better images than me? If only. And unfortunately, we get drawn into that mindset. And that's why I say, be kind to yourselves, because we all feel like it, all of us. I felt like it when I started. I feel like it now. I've talked to plenty of other photographers. There are very few photographers, very few, who are I just produced an amazing image. There's nothing wrong with it. It's faultless. I have met them, and on the whole, they're not my favourite photographers. My favourite photographers are the ones that are constantly driven to improve. The photographers that think they've produced the best ever image probably are a little bit on the cocky side. There are one or two out there who would deserve that status, but mostly they're just a bit cocky for my taste. So I say be kind to yourselves to remind me, although I say it to people who might be listening, it's really to remind me to be kind to myself, because it's a good thing to do. Every day or every time I record one of these podcasts or our videos, I remind myself that no matter how bad I'm feeling, probably I'm doing a half decent job. Probably I'm not a bad photographer. And me beating myself up is unfair on me, and it's unfair on those around me, particularly my team, who bear the brunt of it, because not only am I my own boss, I'm the boss here too. And I don't know if I'm very good at it sometimes. I'm a bit quick to criticise and a bit slow to praise. And that's a real shame. And that's wired in me, because I always think we can do better. I always think tomorrow is going to be a much stronger day. And that's it. You know, it's just a weakness. And I don't think it's healthy. And I don't think it's a good thing. It is what drives the business, this energy of mine. It is what fuels it. It is what pushes it forwards. But at the end of the day, it's not as healthy as it could be. So all I'm saying is be kind to yourselves. Give yourselves a break. You're amazing photographers. You're creating beautiful images. You're making the best of every opportunity. And I think you deserve some credit. So that's why I say be kind to yourselves. Anyway, onto a serious topic. These podcasts are really just me sitting on my own, talking to myself. It's a strange thing, but it's quite cathartic. So onto workflow. Now, I have quite strong opinions about workflow because it's important. Let me say that again, because it's important. If you start out and you haven't got an organized workflow, you would be surprised how quickly you start to lose control of everything. Now, here we have a very organized workflow, and I still lose control of bits if I'm not uber careful. So let me talk through what we do here in broad terms. I'm not going to go into too much detail. I will try and put together one of the articles about it, because I think it's something that's probably easier to write down than it is to describe. However, I think in the description of it, it will highlight the importance of the workflow, if not the details to drive it. So when our images come in off camera, and by the way, I'm not talking about the shoot workflow itself, and I'm not talking about the client relationship workflow. Those are slightly different things. So each of the parts of the business has a different workflow. So for instance, the process of bringing in a client, creating images for the client, selling images to the client, and then hopefully getting them to come back in again in a few years' time. That's our client workflow. That's the business workflow. The shoot workflow itself, so starting with the meeting and greeting, going out into the location or into the studio, creating all of the images that you think the client's going to love, and then wrapping up the session, that's a workflow all of its own as well. And I'll talk about those in different podcasts. This podcast is specifically about the workflow from when I take the images off the camera to when they're finished and ready to go in front of the client, because it's quite an important part. In fact, it's the bit that most people ignore until it's too late, in my opinion anyway. So here, when I bring the images off the camera, we import them straight onto the hard drives, pretty much unnamed. Each card goes into its own folder, so there's no contention. So if they've all got the same unique names, it doesn't really matter. They'll go straight onto a folder. I don't rename them at that stage, because if I have two cameras, so let's say I'm photographing a wedding with an assistant, we might both be shooting at the same time on different cameras, but with the same timestamps. And so when I bring them in, the files might have the same names. And so to get around that, I put them into separate folders. And so they sit there. And then I drag the whole lot into Lightroom. Okay. Now that memory card is still not formatted. Or those memory cards are still not formatted. They're now sitting in our card readers. And by the way, we have two memory cards in each camera. And the second copy is still sitting inside the camera. Once I brought them into Lightroom, then and only then do I select all of the images from that job. I order them by capture time, and then I rename them. Now, the renaming is quite important. Don't just leave your file names DSC0001, DSC0002, or whatever letters you've put on your camera. Why do I say that? I say that because in a year's time, when someone emails you out of the blue and says, I've got this image of yours, it's named DSC0001, if you've taken as many images as most of us do, you're not going to have a clue what that image is from. You're not going to have a clue where to find it. So don't do it. Start by getting a good, solid naming convention set up. We have one here. It works around the date, 4 unique letters, and then a unique number for the shoot. That's it. Very simple. I'll post one of those somewhere so you can see it. But eventually, when we finish renaming, each file has a year, a month, and a day number at the beginning, 4 distinct letters. So let's say it's Peter and Jane's wedding. That would be P-A-J-W. Those are the 4 letters, Peter and Jane's wedding. It's very simple, doesn't mean very much. And all I'm doing is giving ourselves a clue should someone email in that right away we've got a pretty good idea what that shoot might be. But as soon as I hit the date stamp, then I've found it. The reason we use letters at all, apart from giving us a slight clue, is that if I did 2 or 3 or 4 portrait shoots on the same day, they'd all have the same date, but I want them to have a unique job code. So we always give them a 4-letter job code, and then an underscore, and then 0001, 0002, 0003. And so each set of images is numbered uniquely for that job. 1 to 500, 1 to 2000, depending if it's a wedding or a portrait shoot. And I never, ever rename them again. Now, I know there's a school of thought that says once you've picked out the images you're going to show the client, you rename those. I don't subscribe to that point of view. Some very clever photographers do. I don't. Their argument is that you do not want the client to see there's gaps in the images that they're seeing. My point of view is I don't care. Not once in my career have I had a problem where a client wanted to see all of the images in the gaps. Because we make it clear to the client right up front when I'm talking to them, there are going to be outtakes. There's going to be shots of the floor when I've hit the button by accident. There's going to be images that are soft. Plus the fact that I use the camera to set my exposure. So I'll take an image and then I will set the exposure off that image. So of course there's going to be rejected images and you're never going to see them. In fact, our contract with weddings has it written in there. You will not see the images I don't want you to see. Obviously it's written in lawyer speak, so it's Latin or something, but that's essentially what I'm saying. So once they're renumbered, they stay renumbered as raw files. And that means no matter what, I can always go back and find that original number, that original file. We then back those files up and I won't format any of the memory cards until that folder is completely backed up and checked. We just back up onto a second hard drive. It's no big deal. They're 80 quid for 3 terabytes. Sit them in a docking station and you're done. Now I can take the memory cards out and if I wish to, I can reformat them for another job. But these files now are sitting on my main active Drobo unit, which we have here, and also on a backup hard drive. I also catalogue that it's happened. So we have a spreadsheet, it's just Google Sheets, which is very effective for this kind of thing. It's nothing sophisticated. We use Light Blue for tracking our clients. This is not for tracking the clients. It's just for checking and making sure that I have archived everything correctly and it's in the right folders. That's all. A tick list, job by job by job. So now once they're in Lightroom, we're going to start working on them. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of the selection process. In fact, it's not me that does it. It's actually Sarah at the studio. Why? Well, part of it is that I tend to like people, and because I like them, I tend to like their pictures a lot, and I tend to over-select. Also, if I've worked hard for an image, if I've had to lie in a puddle or climb a tree, I'll think the photograph is brilliant, simply because I worked hard. And of course, there's no relationship necessarily between how hard I worked for an image and whether it's any good. What I need is a cold pair of eyes who never... What I need is a cold pair of eyes who wasn't involved in the shoot, who will simply look at the image and ask the question, is that any good? That's it. That's what I'm after. So Sarah does the selections. Once they're done, we split them into 2 folders. We have level 1. These are the images that Sarah selected, or I've selected if I have to. And then we have level 2. Those are all of the other images. We never delete anything. I never remove anything because those images may yet be useful. All I've done at the moment is split them into 2 folders. They're folders on the hard drive. And incidentally, one of the key things about a workflow, if you can, make your workflow revolve around folders on your hard drive, not keywords in Lightroom or, you know, any other database for that matter. Why do I say that? Well, software goes obsolete and it does it alarmingly quickly. So those of us who are on Lightroom Classic at the moment will know that there's a big question mark about what's going to happen next to Lightroom. Those of us that used to use Aperture will know that that went. Apple decided wasn't economically viable and simply got rid of it. So everyone that had big catalogs that were managed in Aperture entirely by keywords and colors and stars, of course, lost all that information. It's gone. whereas those of us that use folders to organise our images still had it. We just had to re-catalogue everything. We had to drag all those folders back into Lightroom or whatever. And of course, that makes it very quick to do. So if you can, organise yourself around folders. So each job has a folder. In that job will be a level one and a level two folder. And in those folders are the files, and they're sequentially named. Once I've done that, we will colour correct all of the raw files. So this is just my workflow, remember. This is not what I'm saying you should do. I'm simply describing what we do. So we colour correct everything in Lightroom, and then as soon as I'm happy, all of the colours are correct. No cropping, no vignetting, no retouching. I export all of those files as PSDs, as Photoshop files, into their own folder. So the level one folder now has got another folder underneath it called PSDs, and these are going to be the images that I finally retouch. As I export them in Lightroom, I also add them to the Lightroom catalog. So every raw file now has an equivalent PSD in the level one folder. One by one, I will then go through and decide what retouching to do, whether it's retouching blemishes, vignetting. I do all the vignetting in Photoshop, cleaning up eyes, stray hairs, you know, the kind of stuff, normal Photoshopping. But I do it on each Photoshop file. Then in Lightroom, I have the ability to do two things. One, I can put the crop on top. I don't crop in Photoshop, I crop in Lightroom on that PSD. Why? Because it's incredibly versatile and very quick. It means I can change my mind a lot, basically. So I crop each image in Lightroom, and then I will create a duplicate copy, a virtual copy. So it's not really a different file, it's just in Lightroom, it has a different version, and I'll create a black and white version of it. All of those files are then exported as JPEGs. Okay, so I've created a PSD for each RAW file. It might have one, two, sometimes three or four different virtual copies, depending on whether I wanted different crops or different black and whites. And then I spit the whole lot out into folders as JPEGs. And the way we do it here, and there are plenty of tools to do this, is we create in advance the files that I think I might need in the future. Okay, I don't go backwards, forwards all the time. Oh, can you give us a low-res version? Can you give us a high-res version? I do the whole lot at the beginning. So we have folders underneath that are various. The first is a full-size printable version of that file. The second is a 2,500 pixel along the longest edge version of that file. The third is a smaller version, 1,200 pixels or something, with our signature on it. They all have different uses. The printable files says what it does on the tin, there for print. The medium res files are useful because they're good for social media for me, without my brand on them. They're good for all sorts of things, slideshows and the like, but they're not really high enough resolution to print from. You could print to about A4, but you wouldn't normally. Then there's the branded files, and they're for any files that are going to go out onto social media unchecked. So we use sticky albums here. And it's those files we'll upload into sticky albums. And if a client shares them, they'll all have my brand on them. And that means I can see instantly whether someone's sharing our files. If I'm looking at a folder, I know where the files came from. It's got our brand on. We also have in Lightroom the ability to mark images with star ratings. So we pick out what we call heroes. They're just the pictures that I really liked from that folder. They are copied two places. They're copied into a folder for the client, but they're also copied into Dropbox. This is all done automatically. And because they're on Dropbox, at any one time, I can look at my Dropbox folders and find all of the heroes from any one job, which is great if I want to post something or if I just want to show somebody the best images from a shoot, then they're all there in Dropbox. And we do this day in, day out. And because I've done it for so long, anyone can look at the folders and know, broadly speaking, where I am in the workflow. So if there's only a level two folder, the images haven't yet gone through selection. If there's a level one and a level two folder, but no PSDs, then they haven't yet been colored, or they certainly haven't been finished in coloring. If there's a PSD folder, but there's no JPEGs, they're probably still in retouch. And if there are JPEG folders, they've all been run. And that way we know at any one point, just by looking at the folders, where we are in the workflow and what needs to be done next. And that's a really simple example of how to use the workflow so it's consistent and it's reliable. And so once the files are all spat out like that, I do two things. One, eventually we're going to archive the job. So the archive will go onto another removable hard drive that sat in a docking station. And we also copy all of the JPEGs I generated onto a single Droba unit on the network. which has all of the files that people might want to use. And that clearly is growing and growing and growing. But disk space doesn't cost that much these days, and it's very easy then for my team to log in, have a look down all of the folders that are organized by year, find any file I want and use it. If somebody does come back to us from a really old job, I've also got all of the files indexed on their archive. So each archive is run through a piece of software called NeoFinder, and that just keeps a catalogue of everything that's come out onto the docked drives. So if I ever need to find a PSD file, for instance, or go back to a RAW file, I've got a catalogue of it. It's a really simple workflow, but it's just very effective. And the principles are very simple. I use folders. I don't use metadata to describe what's going on. We never have fewer than two copies of the original RAW files, ever. There's always at least two files. At any one time, you can see using the folders where I am in the workflow. And at the end of the workflow, everything is catalogued in a simple database that has nothing more than text files in it. That's it. That's how simple it is. And that way, we have a very reliable workflow, very simple, very fast. Yes, it takes up a bit of storage to have RAW files and PSDs all on the disk at the same time, but storage isn't that expensive anymore. And that's it. That's how we do it. Now, I know some of this won't be entirely clear unless I write out the different folder structures and show you. And of course, I will do that. I will sit down and put an article together that describes in detail our workflow. But that wasn't what I meant to say here, really. It wasn't about how do we do it. It's about the fact that we thought about it and we do it consistently and have done for many, many years. Occasionally, we tweak it a little bit. Occasionally, I'll change the names of a folder here and there. But on the whole, we've had the same workflow for about 14 years. And it stood the test of time. In all of that time, not once have we lost a folder accidentally. Not once have I lost a file accidentally. Not once have I been unable to locate a file for a client. Everything is here, it's all at our fingertips, and it's all clear. And it's really important, at least in my opinion, that you start to do that right from the get-go. So at the end of that, I hope you found even the dullest of subjects, which is workflow, at least a little bit interesting, and you've taken away the point that probably you should be having a think about it. This is the podcast for MasteringPortraitPhotography.com. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can get it on iTunes, or you can go straight across to our website to listen to it. If you have any suggestions for things you'd like to hear us talk about, then please do email them in. I'm at paul_w@masteringportraitphotography.com. That's paul_w@masteringportraitphotography.com. I will respond to any emails I get, of course. So until next time then, and now you know why I say it, be kind to yourselves. Take care.